share signed up. I'll send an email out before we go. This is what's going to be in your share. I usually have a link on at least two cuts for each share with a recipe, you know, so that if it's something that they haven't had before, they can try a recipe out. And then I'll also send a list of, hey, this is what we also have available for add-on. So, like, at the beginning of the summer, we put hot dogs and bratwurst in the shares. And then through the rest of the summer, we've been putting the bratwurst and the hot dogs a little more sparingly in the shares and letting people buy those as add-ons to their shares. Because it's a premium cut, a high-dollar cut, that we only have at a certain time of the year. So then those customers, our CSA customers, have priority when it comes to add-on cuts. If they want pork chops and they want 10 packages of pork chops, I give them all 10 packages of pork chops. And then when we send out an email to our larger list of 700 people, if we're out of pork chops, then we're out of pork chops. So not only is there the guaranteed meat, but there's the benefit of having priority meat. There's the benefit of having the lamb that doesn't necessarily get sold into our regular market, the benefit of having the beef that doesn't necessarily get sold into it. That's how we work it. We keep track of what we put in every share. I try to mix it up so that it's like, it's not every week they always get spicy chorizo sausage. We try to mix it up to the different sausages. And I have tried to mix it up, you know, after the first year people were like, you know, bacon every week in the winter was good, but bacon every week in the summer, you know, especially when there's no tomatoes, wasn't as exciting. So we've tried to break it up a little bit and make it a little more diverse than I did in the past. I love the meat CSA model because I love people, I love talking, so it still gives me the good customer relationships, and we've built awesome relationships with our CSA customers. We have customers that have been with us from the very beginning. We have customers that are new, and we're even able to build a deeper relationship with our CSA customers than we are with our individual whole and half hog customers, because those people buy from us and communicate with us, you know, once or twice a year. We're the CSA customers, and we go all year long. I go to Des Moines just as many times as I did with the downtown Des Moines Farmers Market, but it's at 4 o'clock in the afternoon instead of 4 o'clock in the morning, and it's every other week instead of 24 weeks in a row in the summer, where it just gets overwhelming. And maybe if I you know, didn't work at a church, and Sunday mornings obviously being a busy time for me, it was just so stressful. And I can take kids. Yep, we talked about that. So that's kind of any other details about the CSA, or did I kind of answer? When I made the jump, I didn't really. So when we made the jump, we wanted to build the hoop house. So we came up with the CSA idea, Beck and I. We went to Pella on a date, and we came up with the pricing of how we were going to do the CSA model, what they were going to get, and how much it was going to cost. And then, basically, I said, we want to sell $10,000 worth of CSA shares for the first year, because we want to be able to pay for the hoop building. That's what $10,000 would get us, all the lumber we needed and the structure itself. And so I told Penny that at the PFI conference that we were going to, or I saw her somewhere else, and then we caught back up, and I said, we want to sell $10,000 worth of shares. And it was like October when I told her that at the farm crawl. That's what it was. And I said, we want to sell $10,000 worth of shares by January. And she's like, no, that's not going to happen. And it did happen, which was awesome. And we've just kind of grown it from there. We have about 35 CSA members now. Which is a good number for us. It would be nice. I when I've worked on making a business plan, I've always kind of topped it out around 50, because there is a certain amount of inventory management that has to take place to run a CSA, and if I got above that, it would be more work to handle that inventory, and you'd have to have more inventory. You know, I think I could service 50 CSA shares or 50 CSA members, I guess, between quarter, half, and whole. And I'd say 45% of our members are half shares, 45% of our members are quarter, and 10% are whole shares. And that's been the way from the beginning. The whole share members are just like big families or paleo pros. And I mean, because they're getting 18 pounds of meat a month. So, which honestly isn't as much as you would think. You know, the people that get 4.5 pounds of meat a month, I'm like, what do you guys eat the rest of the time? You get a pound of sausage, pack of chops, you know, a pound of bacon, some hot dogs, and, you know, a pork steak, and, like, that's week one. But they don't necessarily have 5 kids either. So yeah, it's been a good model for us. It's a step above the individual cuts, for sure, as far as consistency and profitability and or sustainability, not necessarily profitability, but, and it's also nice to get that money all at once, because then we're able to do things like purchase a couple thousand bushels of grain at once, and have the cash on hand to do that. So yeah. Every day. Both. Yeah. I feel limited every day. Like, I would love to own that across the road. I mean, that would be perfect. The stickle ground over here is like 140 acres or something like that. I would love to own that. I mean, they're absentee landowners. Becca told them one time we would love to own it, and they're like, yeah, you know, we can sell that. I don't remember. Do you remember what they said for price? $8,000 an acre, and you just laughed and walked away. So that's not happening anytime soon. So we try to diversify, and I see diversification as two things. I see diversification as livestock, like we have. I think that's what most people, when they think about small-scale farms, they think of diversifying your farm, having livestock, having berries, having gardens, having whatever. But I think equally as important or more important for us is diversification of marketing. And so we sell to institutions. We've sold meat to Central College in Pella. We sell meat to restaurants in Des Moines. We sell meat to individual customers. We sell individual cuts. We sell a CSA. So we have, if any one of those falls apart, we have other options to fall back on. And we only sell the things that work within our system, right? Like, we're not selling meat every single week to a restaurant in Des Moines, because we've had restaurants that are like, you know, hey, we could take 80 pounds of loin every 2 weeks. Great, that's 4 pigs worth of loin. What do I do with the rest? Okay, you're talking about 80 pounds of loin. I'm talking about 400 some pounds of other meat. You know, I didn't do very good on that math, but a lot more meat. So what do I do with that? So when we work with restaurants or chefs in Des Moines, we work with them on our terms, where they're like, we'll buy a half a hog and we'll do something special, a special menu thing with that. Or, you know, we work a lot with the cheese shop, and they'll buy like all the liver or tongue or odd bits, from us and do their magic with it. You know, just special one-off things like that. Central College, if they want to do a really good meal, they'll buy a whole bunch of roast from us and do pulled pork. So they'll buy rear legs and shoulders and stuff and do a lot of stuff. So that diversification has helped. Because as much as I would love more land, the reality is it's not in the cards. Regulatory for the farmer, I feel, is like minimal. Like, and the reason I say, oh, for the CSA, it's just that warehouse license to hold the meat. Like, I don't know. Maybe they would expect me to have a farmer's market license for Polk County, but I don't really feel like they would. It's a drop-off location. It's a prepaid. I mean, they paid for it. Although we do sell other things, but it's. It's one of those deals where if I called Department of Inspections and Appeals, they probably wouldn't have an answer for me either. So it's one of those deals where you just cross that bridge when it comes. Nobody's going to be that mad at you. Yeah, exactly. If I'm going to sell it anywhere, if I'm going to sell red meat anywhere, pork, beef, lamb, it has to be processed at a state-inspected facility. That's why I say there's the barriers to entry as far as government regulation go are like minimal, because I talked to Ty and Bobby at the Story City Locker, where their regulation barriers are like mountains and mountains. It's like Mount Everest on top of Mount Everest on top of Mount Everest, the amount of regulations that they have to have and, you know, facilities and whatever. You know, Ty told me when they built it, they bought used freezer doors. They had to buy 7 doors, and they're tall and they're huge, and they bought them used, and it was like $30,000 worth of freezer doors. I don't have a structure on my farm worth $30,000. My house, maybe. That's negotiable. I built it, so. But I mean, I don't have a tractor on my farm worth that. I don't have anything worth that. So, the barriers to entry, I feel like for a beginning farmer, the barriers to entry are how you use your time and how you use your finances. I think we bought this farm with nothing on it 8 years ago. I think if we would have, and part of the reason was because we were living in a church-owned parsonage, and we didn't really want to live in that anymore, so it was like we were going to move anyway. It's kind of a deal. But if we would have had a house in town already, and I would have rented a 5-acre spot like that homestead, abandoned homestead up there, I think I could be in the same place today as I guarantee I would be in the same place today, or maybe even further ahead. Because buying this, we had to build a house, and we had to build tons of infrastructure over the first 3 and 4 years. You know, the first winter we had cattle on the farm, like we were out like propping up pallets with T-posts and putting tarps over them to give them shelter and like, you know, putting tin up along the fence so they could get out of the wind. We didn't have that building until the third winter we were here. We didn't have that building until like the 5th or 6th winter we were here. We didn't have fence until the 2nd or 3rd year that we were here. Like, Becca chased cows for a living the first 2 years that we were here. While I was in town, you know, every day the cows would get out because we were trying to like rotationally graze with our solar fencer in the middle of the field. So I guarantee if we would have started off up there, we would be at the exact same place, or further along. There's a lot of ways that I look at our farm. You know, I think there's times when people kind of look at me and they're like, "Oh, you're not full-time farming yet." And but I look at this farm in a lot of ways, or you know, we talked to my uncle about his farm up there and a lot of different things, and I've looked at that as like, I see myself building a farm more so for the future than I am for me right now. You know, I think that my kids will have more benefit from this farm than I do. If they choose to, yeah. And they're going to have to diversify it a lot. They're going to have to get smarter. If all 5 of them want to make a living off of 40 acres, I think they can do it, but they're going to have to get crazy smart. You know, somebody's going to, you know, there's going to be a lot of value-added stuff going on, but I think it can be done. But I think Becca and I hope we're laying a good foundation for them if that's a road that they want to choose. And if it's a road that they don't want to choose, man, we got a really nice place to live when we're old. And if the porch hasn't, you know, if we put some gutters up, the porch might even still be there, and we can sit on rockers and look out across the pasture. My beginning farmer picture would be old homestead. You know, I read books. I kind of have quit reading books because I found that I just need to do a lot of stuff. But I've read books. You know, you read Jim Gerrish books, or you read Greg Judy books and things like that. And Greg Judy's, isn't he down in Missouri? Jim Gerrish is out in Idaho. And they talk about, you know, hey, Greg Judy especially talks about never paying more than $15 for a bale of hay. And it's like, you're not buying a $15 bale of hay in Iowa that's worth anything. And he talks about, you know, renting ground for $25 an acre. There's no 25. He says you just got to go find abandoned land. Well, there's, you know, you guys drove out here. There's no abandoned land around here. Somebody's renting it, and it's competitive to get that rent. There's farmers that, you know, with corn under $3 right now, there's farmers that are going to, I'm guessing there's farmers that are going to give up leases or lose leases, and there's bigger farmers that are going to No, they're gonna pay for a lease at a loss, knowing that they're gonna farm at a loss on that ground, just so they have access to that ground. So it's not the same as Southern Missouri, maybe, where, you know, there's a lot of people buying ground to hunt deer and not caring about it. There's a lot of rented ground around here, but there's a lot of empty homesteads where I think you could get started, and I think you could raise pigs on them, and I think you could raise chickens on them, and make a lot of headway, and then step into purchasing a farm. And I think we could, you know, that's not to say that in 5 years with some shifts to the pigs that it's not a full-time living for us. You know, definitely, I think, you know, we could easily raise and finish and sell 300 plus pigs a year on this farm, in a way that we feel comfortable raising them and make a profit and a comfortable living off of it. But part of our idea is to do it without debt and to do it in a way that, you know, that we can still live the life we want to live. And if Becca and I were 20, 24 years old and didn't have any kids, you know, the way we would do it would probably be different than the way we do it now with five kids. And, you know, we desire a little bit more comfortable house with five kids than we would if it was just me and her. You know, we could live in an igloo in Alaska, be Alaskan farmers, Becca.
I'm sorry, I was talking about five.
Farm in Alaska? Farm in Alaska?
No.
I'd like to farm in Alaska someday. I'm not thinking about Nyman Ranch. We thought long and hard about Nyman Ranch when we put up the hoop. Part of my problem with putting up the hoop was I didn't want to put up a structure that I was only going to use 6 months a year. And so I talked to Nyman Ranch, and they were hard up enough for hogs at the time, and still I think are. I said, I only want to raise one group of hogs a year. I want to put pigs in April, and I want them to go out in October. And that's it. That's all I want to raise. And they were okay with that. I was going to buy feeder pigs from them. But when I started running the numbers, and, like, I forget what they were, but, you know, it was going to be good if I was making $30 a hog or something like that. And I was like, well, I just raised four more of my pigs. And that's the same as, or you know, it'd take four Nyman Ranch hogs to equal one of my pigs. And so I just said, I think we're just going to stay away from it. I think it's okay. I know they got bought out again. I don't know how some of the farmers. I know that early on, it's been a solid market. And if you don't want to do any marketing, it's probably a way to go. But I don't. Marketing is what I enjoy. So yes. Then people, yeah. Yes, question. Selling, yeah, I haven't, just because I never have enough pigs of my own. Like, we have waiting lists for 9 months for our pigs, so I haven't, I have lots of people ask. It'd be a fun place to get to, but we're gonna have to jump up our infrastructure if we're gonna do that. No, it's because of our hole and half hogs. But the CSA takes away from it some, but not that much. I mean, like a quarter share member is only getting 60 pounds of meat a year. So they would be, yeah, some of them would be. And some of our CSA customers have turned into whole and half customers. The benefit of the CSA for the customer, for the most part, is if they don't have a deep freeze. It's like getting a whole hog and having that consistency of meat all year long, without having to have a deep freeze. A lot of our CSA customers live in apartments or small houses in Des Moines and things like that, where they don't have a deep freeze. So.